were day, and they were no longer under the hill. Corny could smell fresh-turned earth, cut grass, and rotting fruit.
"Go ahead," Nephemael said, nodding toward the trees. "Eat whatever you desire."
Corny was no longer sure whether he was hungry. Still, to be polite and to avoid displeasing the knight, he went over and plucked an apple from one of the trees. It tumbled easily into his hand. The silver skin was warm to the touch, as though blood ran beneath the surface. Corny looked up at Nephemael, who appeared to be studying a white bird perched in one of the trees. Corny took a cautious bite of the fruit. It tasted of fullness, of longing and wishful thinking and want, so that one bite left him empty. Nephemael smirked as he watched Corny lick the broken fruit, devour the pulp, sink to his knees, sucking the pale center pit. Several of the host gathered to watch him gorge. Beautiful faces with upswept features and teardrop eyes turned toward him like flowers. They were laughing. All Corny could do was eat. He barely noticed Nephemael laughing uproariously. A woman with thin, curving horns tossed him a bruised plum. It burst in the dirt, and he hastened to lap up the pulp, soil and all. He licked the dirt after the fruit was gone, hoping for a darkened drop. Black ants crawled over the sticky, fallen fruits, and he ate those as well, blindly questing for any morsel. After a time, Nephemael came forward, pressing a cracker to Corny's lips. He took it in his mouth thoughtlessly. It tasted like sawdust, but he swallowed it down. It felt solid in his stomach, and the overwhelming, empty hunger abated. It left him squatting under one of the trees, awake and aware. He looked at his filthy hands, the stained clothes, the laughing folk, and he choked to keep from crying like a child for sheer helplessness. "There, there," Nephemael said, patting Corny's shoulder. Corny stood, fists clenched. "Poor Corny! You look so fragile, I'm afraid your heart will break." There was amusement in the knight's tone. Corny could feel himself reacting to that rich, smooth voice, could feel the shame and embarrassment receding until they seemed of only distant importance. "Come here, my pet. You've made a mess of yourself." Nephemael raised his hand, beckoning. One look into those yellow eyes and he broke like a wishbone. Corny stepped into the circle of Nephemael's arms, basking in the feel of thorns. Tonight the revels were quieter. No dueling fiddles or raucous daisy chain dances. There were no piles of fruit or honey cakes. Instead, there were whispers and smothered laughter. The only light came from braziers throughout the brew and the small fairies that flitted over the congregation. It was hard to think. Kay's feet were cold as they padded along the earthen floor. The haze of magic had lifted slowly, but the less she was enchanted, the more she was terrified. She was going to die. It didn't matter if her feet were cold. Reuben's back was to her, his pewter hair sliding like mercury over the shoulders of his coat as he led her through the crowd. She wasn't going to die, she reminded herself. This was a game, only a game. One finger rose unconsciously to touch her mouth, which felt oddly soft and swollen. She remembered too well the pressure of his lips, their softness, and she remembered the expression on his face when he had pulled back from her. Horror, perhaps, or disgust. She shook her head to clear it, but nothing would come clear. Some of the eyes she passed sparkled with greed, and she wondered how the solitary fae planned on dividing what was left of her. Kay took a deep breath of cold, autumn air, then another. Not funny. Reuben's hand tightened on her upper arm, guiding her past beings both beautiful and grotesque. The dirt was damp under her bare feet, and she concentrated on that,
steadying herself. The queen was standing at the center of what looked to be a large, silver dance floor. It was composed of several pieces, each engraved with representations of bound humans and fae, fitted together like a puzzle. In the center, Kay could easily see ornate manacles attached to short, heavy chains. Unlike the base, the manacles and chains were unmistakably iron. She could smell it. The layers of Nick Nevin's diaphanous black robes blew in the breeze. The longest layer, the train, was held up at 3 points by goblin attendants. Her collar was stiff, rising like a translucent black fin behind her neck. Kay trained her eyes on the collar, let her gaze stray to the looping mound of red braids piled on the queen's head, let her gaze fall anywhere but into those deadly blue eyes. Reuben dropped to one knee, and she did not need any prompting to follow. "Do rise," the queen said. Kay and Reuben rose. The queen waved a dismissal at Reuben, an impatient gesture of her hand. He hesitated a moment, then approached the queen, lowering himself to his knee again. "I would give anything for her release," Reuben said in a voice so low Kay was sure that only those very close could hear it. He stared downward. Whether at the earthen floor or the queen's slippered foot, Kay could not say. The sincerity in his voice frightened her. This was no safe thing, the way he was talking. Did he think he had to do this to repay some debt he thought he owed her? Did he think he had to do this because he'd kissed her? Nick Nevin's hand brushed over the crown of Reuben's head. Her voice was as soft as his, but her eyes sparkled with feral delight. She was looking beyond him and out into the blackness beyond the brew. "Are you not already my servant in all things? Is there something of yours I do not already possess?" He raised his head then, looking up into the unseelie queen's blue eyes, and Kay wanted to yell a warning, "Something!" But the moment was frozen and she did not move. "Perhaps I could offer my enthusiasm," he said. "You have oft complained of its lack." The queen's lips quirked at the edges, an almost smile, but she did not seem amused. "I think not. I find that I like you willful." "There must be something," Reuben insisted. Nick Nevin put her first finger against her carmine lips and tapped lightly. When she spoke, her voice was loud enough to carry in the natural amphitheater of the Hollow Hill. "Tragedy is so compelling. I find myself moved to offer to play a game with you. Would you like that?" "I am grateful, my lady," Reuben said, his head still bowed. She turned her gaze on Kay. "Well, child, it seems that you pleased my knight after all. Answer a riddle, and the unseelie court will gift you to him." There was a murmur in the crowd. Kay nodded her head, unsure of what constituted propriety in a fairy court. There was true amusement in the queen's voice as she spoke. "Cut me, and I weep tears as red as my flesh, yet my heart is made of stone. Pray tell, mortal girl, what am I?"
"You are yourself." Kay bit her lip to keep back the hysterical laughter threatening to bubble up her throat again. "Okay. Redskin, stone center, what matched that description?" She thought she dimly remembered an old story about someone having their heart turned to stone and then restored by tears, but she wasn't sure where the memory came from. No, riddles usually had simple, common-sense, one-word answers. They always seemed obvious once you knew the answer. Flesh. Maybe some kind of fruit? And the stone could be a pit? Oh, a cherry. Was that supposed to be funny? Kay bit her lip. If she answered the riddle correctly,
She could walk out of here, something she desperately wanted to do. She cast her eyes to both sides of the queen, looking for Spike or Lutie, but if they were in the crowd, her surreptitious glances did not find them. Walking out of here was not part of the plan. Right now, she wasn't sure she cared much for what was part of the plan. She bit her lip harder when she realized how far Reuben had already gone for her. Had Lutie and Spike realized that she might need protection while she was a prisoner in the Unseelie Court? If the various comments she had heard tonight were any indication, Reuben was being a prude. Clearly, a knight of the host could do whatever he wanted with a human prisoner. Now, knowing all this, if Spike thought Reuben was such a scumbag, why convince her to go along with a plan that left her in his hands for the better part of a night? No, she was going to answer the question before things got out of control. She was going to answer the question, tell Reuben everything, above all how sorry she was, and hope he understood. Then she was going to find Spike and get some real answers. A cherry, Kay said as firmly as she could. Reuben exhaled with a sharp hiss, although he remained on his knees. She wondered how long he had been holding his breath. My lady, you cannot, the fox-faced scribe began. But the Unseelie Queen quelled him with a gesture of her hand. Rise, my knight. You have chosen well. She is yours. Reuben rose and turned slightly toward Kay, an expression of unguarded relief on his face. Kay reached out her hand toward him. She would explain everything as soon as they were dismissed. She would make him understand. Now, I order you to offer up your prize to be sacrificed for the tithe, the queen said. There was laughter in the crowd. She saw fury and shame coalesce into something horrible. She saw Reuben's hand drop, twitching over the hilt of his sword. Then he seemed to regain control of himself, and he bowed to his queen with a smile. Turning to Kay, he pressed his lips against her neck, his hand holding her hip, speaking against the skin so that only she could hear him. What belongs to you, yet others use it more than you do. His mouth moving against the skin of her neck made Kay shiver. She opened her mouth to speak, but he shook his head, raising his hand to run his thumb over her jawline. Think on it. He let go of her and stepped primly to the side to join the other knights. Three white-robed figures strapped Kay down, their heavily gloved hands careful when handling the iron. First they shackled her ankles, then her wrists. The iron cuffs burned softly against her skin. Four knights of the Unseelie Court stepped to the north, south, east, and west points. Reuben stepped to the south, below her feet. His eyes did not meet hers. What belongs to you, yet others use it more than you do. Four short, squat men carried braziers blazing with green fire to the four points around the circle where the knights stood. The little men went down on their knees, balancing the braziers on their backs like living stools. The queen's fox-faced scribe raised both his hands, and the brew was entirely quiet. Eerily quiet. Kay searched the crowd for some familiar face. For a moment she thought she saw Spike, but then she couldn't be sure. There were so many creatures. More green flames flared around the edge of the brew, casting strange shadows. Somewhere, far outside the circle, a single drum began to beat. The Unseelie Queen began speaking, her voice echoing in the near silence. We gather on this sacred night to fulfill our sacred debt. Tonight, we who rule must kneel. As one being, the Unseelie Court moved to their knees. Only the solitary Fae remained standing. Even the queen knelt, her gown puddling around her. We, the Unseelie Court, keepers of the Earth's secrets, rulers of blood and bone, offer a willing sacrifice in return for the willing obedience of those who dwell in our lands.
Obviously, it didn't bother anyone that their willing sacrifice was in chains, Kay thought. The slow beat of the drum was maddening, a calm contrast to her heart, which was beating itself to death against the cage of her ribs. The Unseelie Queen went on speaking.
What is the sacrifice we offer?
The court spoke as one.
Mortal blood, mortal spirit, mortal passion.
Off to one side of the queen, Kay's eye finally settled on Corny, blank-faced beside Nephemael. His pale brown hair had been cut much shorter and combed toward his face. That and the absence of his glasses made his face look thin and vulnerable. He was dressed all in blue velvet, tricked out as though he was expected to perform Jacobean drama once the sacrifice was over. Nephemael was watching her with his implacable yellow eyes. She hoped he was going to do something very soon. Experimentally, she reached out her own magic to tug at the glamour that was over her. It did not budge, heavy as a wet sheet. She couldn't even feel her wings.
What do we ask in return?
The Unseelie Queen's voice rang out, beautiful and terrible. Again the host spoke.
Obedience, restraint, submission.
Kay's gaze shifted, and she met Reuben's eyes. On his knees, speaking the words of the ritual, his eyes blazed as he tried to communicate with her through the improbable channel of expression. What belongs to you, yet others use it more than you do? It was another riddle, obviously. What belongs to you? In the world of riddles, it's the basics. Body, brain, spirit. She was pretty sure that she used all of those more than she let the next person use them.
We ask, do you understand the compact we offer?
This time it was the solitary Fae who spoke, their voices not as well timed, creating the effect of echoes.
We do understand.
She was looking at it backward, she decided. He wanted her to do something. The riddle was about something she already knew. She looked into his drawn face and understood so completely that it knocked the breath out of her.
What belongs to you, yet others use it more than you do? Your name.
The Unseelie Queen's voice broke her concentration. She seemed to be speaking in time with the distant drum.
Do you accept this mortal as your sacrifice?
We do accept. Kay looked around, in a panic now. What the hell did he want her to use his name for? The brew was huge, and it was full. Did he really think he could somehow get her out of here?
Do you so bind yourselves to us?
The solitary Fae spoke as one.
We do bind ourselves.
Kay couldn't help the frantic pulling on her chain. Panic was spreading through Kay like liquid, turning her blood to ice.
What is the term of your service?
Dawn was coming. Kay saw the red glow out beyond the burning green flames.
7 years is the length of our binding.
The queen raised her dagger.
Let the compact be sealed in blood.
No one was coming to save her. Kay pulled hard on her chains, throwing her whole weight against them, but they were tight, and the heel of her palm could not slip through them. They burned even more as she shifted. The Unseelie Queen looked surprised. Dimly, Kay realized that her calm and silence must have made her seem as though she were still enchanted. She struggled to damp down her panic long enough to think. She had to use his name. She had no idea what to command him to do. A specific command. Save me? Stop this? Get me out of here? Reuben was glaring at her. How could he want her to do this? It made no damn sense, but there was no more time to think.
Wrath, Reuben Rye.
Her voice was soft, the words running together in her panic. She realized what she was doing, and her throat almost closed up. Cut my bonds!
Reuben drew his finger-slim sword, and the unseelie court seethed with noise. A moment of hesitation, and then he smiled. It was a dark, horrible smile, the most terrible expression she had ever seen. Three knights were on him before he was even inside the circle. The green knight's heavy sword crashed against Reuben's at the same moment that a red-clad knight slashed at Reuben's back. He twisted, faster than she would have believed, and his blade sliced the red knight across the face. The fairy clutched at his eyes, staggering, his sword clattering into the circle. Reuben tried to parry a blow from the third knight, a female wielding an axe, but he was too late. The blade bit into his right shoulder so hard that it probably hit bone. Reuben staggered back, gasping with pain, sword drooping in his right hand, the tip dragging along the metal circle. It came up just in time to stab through the green knight's chest as he rushed forward. The knight fell on his side, completely still. There was only a small hole in his armor, but it was already welling with blood. Reuben and the female knight circled each other, exchanging tentative blows. Their weapons were not suited for this kind of combat, his sword too slight and her axe too slow, but both combatants were dangerous enough to compensate. She lunged forward, swinging the axe toward his arm rather than his torso, hoping to catch him off guard. He sidestepped, dodging her blow but missing her with a wide sweep of his own blade. Other unseelie troops were surging forward, too many and varied for Kay to count. Trolls and hobmen and redcaps. The queen was still, her lips pressed together in a thin line. Kay pulled at her chains, arching her body up hard. Nothing gave. Blood had darkened the cloth at Reuben's shoulder in a disturbingly wide stain. Even as she saw him slash the other knight's side hard enough to throw the woman to her knees, there were 10 more opponents surrounding him. There was a blurry of parry and lunge, his body spinning to slice at a clawed hand, to gut an exposed belly. And still more came. Kay turned her head as far as it would go and spat at her hands, vainly trying to lubricate them enough to work them out of the manacles, muttering, "No, no, 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 no." The queen was shouting now, but Kay could not make out her words over the ring of blades and the shouts of onlookers. A small form slid beside Kay on the metal. Spike was scrabbling at her wrist cuffs with a small knife.
"It's all very bad," the little man said. "Okay, it's all gone bad."
"He's going to die," she yelled. Then it occurred to her what she could do. As loud as she could, she shouted, "Wrath, Reuben, Rye! Run!"
The unseelie queen whirled at that, her face savage, advancing on Kay. Her lips twitched over words, but Kay still could not hear them. Reuben slashed at another opponent, keeping his back toward Kay. She wasn't sure whether he had even heard her command. Perhaps he had run as far as he could.
"Hurry, Spike," Kay said, struggling to keep her body from the wild, trapped animal thrashing that would prevent Spike from having any chance at popping the lock.
The little man's brows were narrowed in furious concentration, fingers burning where they touched the iron. Suddenly he was knocked aside as if by invisible hands.
"While you have been most diverting, I find this tiresome."
The queen of the unseelie court placed a slippered foot on Kay's throat. Kay rasped, the pressure cutting off her air, threatening to crack her neck. Then the pressure was gone, and the lady was falling. Droplets of blood spattered across Kay's cheek before the body fell across her. There was a sickening hiss where the queen's cheek hit the iron. She was dead. Reuben looked down at her, but his eyes were unfocused and wild. There was a smear of blood across his mouth, but she didn't think it was his own. He raised his sword, and she only had a moment to scream before it came crashing down on the chains binding her ankles, hitting the metal so hard that it rang. Spike was crawling close again, poking at the motionless body of the unseelie queen and muttering to himself. A hush had fallen over the court. There was a sudden rippling in the air around Kay.
She could feel the magic swirling over her, making the iron cuffs that still clutched her wrists and ankles burn unbearably. Her skin was suddenly too tight, too hot, peeling back as it had done on her lawn, but this time it was not gentle. Her wings ripped free from the thin flesh that bound them just as Reuben slammed his sword against the chain binding her right hand. His eyes went wide, and he stumbled back. He was so stunned he missed the parry as another redcap rushed him. He turned, almost too late, and the redcap's small curved blade cut his thigh. Without the protection of the strange, strong glamour, the iron burned Kay's wrists and ankles like hot brands. She howled in pain, struggling to get the things off, struggling to get out from under the weight of the queen's body. Spike seemed to recover himself enough to get to work on the cuffs again, and this time he managed to pick the lock of the only one still attached to the chain. Her flesh was blistered where the iron had touched it.
"We have to go! Move!"
Spike was pulling at her hand, his face blank with fear. The court had erupted in chaos around them. She could not tell which of the creatures battling or running or hiding was a foe, or whether in fact she had any friends here except the hob who was urging her to her feet, and Reuben, whose sword was spinning in an arc, crashing against a spear held by a spotted creature with shining golden eyes. Blood was running over his right hand. Blood had soaked the left leg of his trousers. His movements were stiffening. She could see that. Kay tried not to concentrate on the pain of the iron, tried to focus on standing up.
"We can't leave him here!"
A volley of pine cones flew around them, bursting into flame where they fell.
"Oh, yes, we can," Spike said, pulling her with renewed determination. "Better he not get a hold of you after you used his name like that."
"No, you don't understand," she said,
but she knew it was she who had not understood. She who had tried to pretend. Reuben had known all along that he was offering her his life.
"You idiot," she wanted to scream. "Wrath, Reuben Rye! I command you to get the fuck out of here with Spike and me right now!"
She screamed it, as loud as she could, sure that he was close enough to hear her this time. Reuben turned, his eyes flashing fury. He seemed to channel that anger into his sword because his next blow cut open the golden-eyed fairy's throat. Kay wobbled on her feet, trying to shore up her knees, trying not to fall into blackness. Her ankles and wrist burned, and all she could taste or smell was iron. Then Reuben was pulling her through the crowd with a blood-soaked hand. He tugged her into a run, and Spike was beside them, running too. As they stepped outside the brew, a figure stepped in front of them, but was cut down before she caught more than an impression of something awkwardly tall and pale gray in color. Then they were in the graveyard, running down the tumbled court's path, past plastic flower grave markers and flattened soda cans, stepping on cigarette butts, and they seemed like talismans that might actually keep the monsters at bay. Until she realized that she was one of the monsters. 11. "But lest you are my enemy, I must inquire." "Oh no, my dear, let all that be. What matter, so there is but fire in you, in me." William Butler Yeats, The Mask. Kay trod up the driveway, her mother's Pinto looking both familiar and strange, as though it was part of a painting that might suddenly be turned on its side and revealed as flat. The door to the back porch seemed like a portal between worlds, and even close as she was, she wasn't sure she would be allowed to step through to the kitchen beyond. More than tired, she felt numb. Reuben leaned against an elm tree and closed his eyes, unsheathed sword dangling limply from one hand. His body was trembling lightly, and next to familiar things, the blood soaking his arm and thigh looked ghastly. Right then, Lootie swooped down from one of the trees, circling Kay twice before landing on her shoulder and scrabbling to press a kiss against the damp skin of her neck. It surprised Kay, and she flinched back from the sudden touch.
"Scared, silly scared, 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 scared,"
Lootie chanted against her neck.
"Me too," Kay said,
pressing her hand against the buzz of the tiny body.
"There'll be a score of songs about you by nightfall,"
Spike said, eyes gleaming with pride. There would have been twice as many if I had died like you planned, wouldn't there? Spike's eyes widened.
We never!
Kay bit her lip, forcing herself to swallow the hysteria that threatened to bubble up her throat.
If Nephomail was going to take the glamour off me, he was going to take it off my corpse.
Dismiss me, Pixie, Reuben said. His eyes had a hollow look to them that made her stomach clench. I was careless. I will hold no grudge against you or yours, but this foolishness ends now.
I didn't plan this. Your name, I never meant to use it for anything.
Kay reached out her hand to stroke the edge of his sleeve. The effect was instantaneous. He circled her wrist with his hand, twisting it hard. Luti squealed, springing from Kay's shoulder into the air. There was no anger in his voice, no sarcasm, no heat. It was as strangely hollow as his eyes. If you wish me to endure your touch, you must order me to do so. Then he dropped her hand so quickly it might have been made of iron. She was shaking, too scared to cry, too miserable to speak. Spike looked at her wide-eyed, as though he was reasoning with a lunatic.
Well then, Kay, tell him he can go. He says he won't hold a grudge. That's a generous offer.
No,
she said, louder than she intended. They all looked at her in surprise, although Reuben's gaze darkened. She had to explain. She turned to him, careful not to touch him.
Come inside. You can clean up your cuts there. I just want to explain. You can leave tonight.
His eyes were dull no longer. They blazed with rage. For a moment, she thought he was going to kill her before she could manage to stammer out his name. Then she thought he might just walk away, daring her to stop him. But he did neither of these things.
As you say, my mistress.
The words curled off his tongue, cutting deeper than she had thought words could.
I would prefer no one else learned the calling of me.
Spike blinked up at the unseelie knight, apparently unable to control a shudder. Luti watched them from the crook of the elm tree.
The Thistle Witch will need to know what had happened tonight, Spike said slowly.
Go ahead, she said. We can talk about it later.
Taking the spare key out from underneath a dusty bottle of bleach, she opened the door as quietly as she could. The house was silent. Reuben followed Kay into the kitchen, and the sight of him carefully closing the back door and filling what was probably a dirty glass with water from the tap was so incongruous she had to stop and watch him. He drank, tipping back his head so that the column of his neck was thrown into profile. He must have seen her staring. As he finished the last of the water, he looked in her direction.
Your pardon, he said.
No, go ahead. I'm just going to make some coffee. The bathroom is there, she pointed.
Do you have any salt? He asked.
Salt?
For my leg. I'm not sure what can be done about the arm.
Oh.
She rummaged around in her grandmother's spice drawer and came up with a canister of Morton's salt.
Wouldn't iodine or something be better?
He just shook his head grimly and walked in the direction of the bathroom. A few minutes later, he returned in his more human glamour. As before, his hair was more white than silver. The bones of his face were slightly less jagged, and his ears were less prominent. He had discarded his shirt, and she was disconcerted to see the pattern of scars on his chest. He must have found some gauze. One thigh looked padded under the leg of his pants. She poured the coffee into two mugs, alarmed to see that her hands were shaking. Spooning sugar into one of the cups, she looked a query at Reuben. He nodded and nodded again when she offered milk.
When I first met you, I didn't know I was a fairy, she said.
He raised an eyebrow.
I presume that you knew you were not human when you blackmailed a kiss from me.
Kay felt her face flood with heat. She just nodded.
The question, of course,
is whether you aided me in the forest for the reward of my name. She stammered, the queasy feeling in the pit of her stomach intensifying. If that was what he thought, no wonder he was furious. There was no way I could have known what you were going to offer me. I just wanted to piss you off in the diner, and I knew fairies don't like to give out their real names. One day, someone is going to cut that clever tongue of yours right out of your head, he said. She bit her lower lip, worrying it against her teeth as he spoke. What had she expected? A declaration of love because of one half-hearted kiss? Kay looked at the steaming cup in front of her. She was sure that if she took a sip of that coffee, she would throw it up. She needed a cigarette. Ellen's jacket was draped over the back of the chair, and she fumbled through it for a cigarette and a lighter. Lighting it, despite Reuben's look of surprise, she took a deep drag. The smoke burned her lungs like fire. She found herself on her knees on the linoleum floor, choking, the cigarette burning the plastic tile where it had fallen. Reuben put the cigarette out with a twist of his boot and leaned forward. "What were you doing?" "I smoke," she said, sitting on the floor. Eyes already watery from coughing could no longer hold back tears. It seemed stupid that this was the thing that would set her off, but she sobbed, feeling more like puking with nothing in her stomach than any crying she'd done. "They're poison," he said incredulously. "Even Ironsiders die from those."
"I know."
She pressed her face against her knees, wiping her cheeks against the fairy gown, wishing she'd let him leave when he'd wanted to. "You're tired," he said with a long sigh that might have been annoyance. "Where do you sleep? You might consider glamouring yourself as well." His face was impassive, emotionless. She smeared the tears on her cheeks and nodded.
"Are you tired?"
"Exhausted." He didn't exactly smile, but his face relaxed a little. They went up the stairs quietly. Her new senses were distracting. She could hear the whistling snore of her mother and the lighter, muffled breaths of her grandmother. Up the stairs, she could smell the wood chips and excrement of her rats, smell the chemical soaps and sprays in the bathroom, could even smell the heavy coating of oily dust that covered most surfaces. Somehow, each odor was more vivid and distinct than she could remember it being. "Ignore it," she told herself. Things had been the same way the last time she had the heavy glamour removed. Just a perk to make up for the fact she couldn't touch half the metal things in the house, and one drag on a cigarette could make her almost pass out. They went into her bedroom and she turned the old-fashioned key to lock the door. There was no way she was going to be able to explain Reuben to her grandmother, glamour or no. "Well, I saw your room," she said. "Now you get to see mine." He waded through the mess to sit on the mattress on the floor. She dug through the garbage bags and found a musty green comforter riddled with cigarette burns for herself. The pink one she usually slept with was already piled on the mattress, and she hoped that it didn't smell too much like her sweat. Reuben pulled off his boots, looking around the room. She watched his eyes settle first on the rat cage, then on the drifts of clothing, books, and magazines lining the floor. "Kind of a dump, I guess." She sat down on the box spring that still graced the frame of the white bed. She watched him, stretching out on her mattress, fascinated by the way the compact muscles moved beneath his skin. He looked dangerous, even tired and bandaged and wrapped in her pink comforter. "What did you do with her?" He looked up through silver lashes of heavy-lidded eyes. "What?" "The girl this room really belongs to. What did you do with her?" "Fuck you," she said, so angry that for a minute she didn't even care that she was supposed to be convincing him how sorry she was. "Did you think I would credit the tears of a pixie?" he asked, turning so that his face was hidden from her. Unspoken slurs hung on her tongue like thistles, hurting her throat with the effort of swallowing them. They were both tired. She was lucky he was still talking to her.
As tired as she was, she couldn't sleep. She watched him instead. Watched as he tossed and turned, tangling the blankets around him. Watched as his face relaxed into exhaustion, one hand curling tightly around the edge of the pillow. He never had looked as real to her as he did in that moment. Hair loose and messy, one bare foot hanging over the edge of the mattress, resting on a library book she'd always meant to return. But she didn't want to think of him as real. She didn't want to think of him at all. And then she was being shaken awake. She blinked in the unnatural darkness of drawn shades. Reuben was sitting next to her on the hard box spring, hands gripping her shoulders so hard she was sure they would bruise. "Tell me that you meant to tell me, Kay," he said, eyes bright. She struggled to be more fully awake. Nothing about this scene made sense, certainly not the anguish so plain on his face. "You were going to tell me that you were a fairy," he insisted. "There was no time." She nodded, still stunned by sleep. He seemed huge. The whole room was swallowed up by his presence so that it was impossible to look anywhere but into his eyes. "Tell me," he said, letting go of her shoulders, his hands moving to smooth the hair back from her face in a rough caress.
"I never meant... I wanted to," she stammered drowsily, the words hard to fit together.
His hands stilled. His voice was low this time.
"Make me believe it."
"I can't," she said.
She had to focus, to find the answer that would make everything right again.
"You know I can't."
"Go back to sleep, Kay,"
he said softly, no longer touching her, his hands fisted on his knees. She levered herself up to her elbows, blearily realizing that she had to stop him before he got up from the bed.
"Let me show you,"
she said, leaning forward to press her mouth to his. His lips parted with no resistance at all, letting her kiss him as though he could taste the truth on her tongue. After a moment, he pulled back from her gently.
"That wasn't what I meant," he said with a small, rueful smile.
She flopped back, cheeks reddening, fully awake now and appalled at herself. Reuben slid off the box spring and onto the floor. He was looking away from her, at the sliver of light showing under the dirty plastic window shade. Rolling onto her side, she looked down at what she could see of his face. Her fingers chipped nervously at a drop of wax on the comforter.
"I answered the riddle. I thought she would let me go, and I answered it anyway."
He looked up at her abruptly, amazed.
"You did at that. Why?"
Kay wanted to explain it as best as she could. He was listening to her, at least for the moment. She made sure to keep her voice completely level, completely sincere. "Because it wasn't supposed to go like it did. I never even thought of using you like that. You were never supposed to..."
"Be glad I did," he said,
but he said it gently. He reached up and ran three fingers down the side of her jaw. "It's strange to see you this way." She shivered.
"What way?"
"Green,"
he said, his eyes like mist, like smoke, like all insubstantial things. She lost her nerve looking into those eyes. He was too beautiful. He was a spell she was going to break by sheer accident. His voice was very soft when he spoke again.
"I have had a surfeit of killing, Kay."
And whether that was meant as a prayer for the past or a plea for the future, she could not say. This time, when he lay down on the mattress and drew the comforter over his shoulders, she watched the cobwebs swing with each gust of air that crept through gaps in the old windows. Words echoed on the edges of her thoughts, phrases she had heard but not heard. She'd seen the scars that ran up and down his chest, dozens of marks, pale white stripes of skin edged in pink. She imagined the Unseelie court as she had seen it the night she'd snuck in with Corny, except that now they were all looking at their new toy, a Seelie knight with silver hair and such pretty eyes.
Ruypen,
she whispered into the quiet of the room.
Are you still awake?
But if he was, he didn't answer her. The next time she woke, it was because someone was pounding on the door.
Kay, time for you to get up.
Her mother's voice sounded strained. Kay groaned. She unfolded herself stiffly from her uncomfortable position on the little bed, feeling the impression of every metal coil along her back. The banging didn't stop.
Your grandmother is going to kill me if I let you miss another day of school. Open this door.
Kay lurched out of bed, stumbling over Ruypen, and turned the key in the lock. Ruypen sat up, eyes slitted with sleep.
Glamour,
he said rustily.
Shit.
She had almost opened the door with massive wings attached to her back, and green. She focused for a moment, drawing energy through her hands, feeling the thrum of it in her fingers. She concentrated on her features, her eyes, her skin, her hair, her wings. Her wrists and ankles were still sore, and she made sure to use the glamour to compensate for the discoloration of the skin where they'd been burned by the iron. Then she opened the door. Ellen looked at her and then looked beyond her at Ruypen.
Kay.
It's Halloween, Mom, Kay said, pitching her voice in a low whine.
Who's he?
Robin, we got too fucked up to drive anywhere. Don't look at me like that. We didn't even sleep in the same bed.
Pleasure to make your acquaintance, Ruypen said muzzily.
In this context, his formality sounded like drunkenness, and Kay felt an overwhelming urge to snicker. Ellen raised her eyebrows.
Fine, sleep it off. Just don't make it a habit, she said finally. And if either of you puke, you clean it up.
Okay,
Kay yawned, closing the door. Considering the sheer volume of vomit she'd cleaned up over the last 16 years, most of it belonging to her mother, she thought that was a pretty uncharitable comment, but she was too tired to dwell on it. A few moments later, Kay was curled up on the box spring again, dropping easily back into sleep. The third time that Kay woke, it was dark outside the window. She stretched lazily, and her stomach tightened in knots. She reached out to the lamp on the end table and switched it on, bathing the room in dim yellow light. Ruypen was gone. The pink comforter was crumpled at the foot of the mattress, two pillows beside it. The sheet covering the mattress was pulled off the corner, as though he had slept restlessly. Nothing to suggest where he'd gone. Nothing to say goodbye. She had only asked him to stay for the day. When darkness had come, he had been free to go. Frantically, she pulled the fairy dress over her head, tossing it on the floor with all the other laundry, tugging on the first clothes she found, a plain white t-shirt and plaid pants with zippers all down the sides. She unbraided her hair and hand-combed it roughly. She had to find him. She would find him. Kay stopped with one hand still dragging through tangled hair. He didn't want her to follow him. If he'd wanted anything more to do with her, he would have at least said goodbye. She'd apologized, and he'd listened. He'd even forgiven her, sort of. That was that. There was no reason to go after him, unless you could count the odd, soft touch of his hand on her cheek or the gentle acceptance of yet another kiss. And what did those things mean anyway? Less than nothing. But when she went down the stairs, Ruypen was there, right there, sitting on her grandmother's flowery couch, and Ellen was sitting beside him. Kay's mother was wearing a red dress and had two sequined devil horns sticking out of her hair. Kay stopped on the stairwell, stunned as the utter impossibility of the scene crashed up against the utter normalcy of it. The television was on, and its flickering blue light sharpened Ruypen's features until she couldn't tell whether he still wore his glamour. He was drizzling pieces of plain white bread with honey from the jar, thick amber puddles of it that he as much poured into his mouth as ate.
"Thank you," he said. "It's very good."
Kay's mother snorted at his politeness.
"I don't know how you can eat that. Ugh."
Ellen made a face.
"Too sweet."
It's perfect. He grinned and licked his fingers. His smile was so honest and unguarded that it looked out of place on his face. She wondered if that was what he had looked like before he'd come to the Unseelie Court. You're one twisted young man, Ellen said, and that only made his grin widen. Kay wondered whether he was smiling at the jibe or smiling because it was so true. Kay walked down a few more steps, and Ellen looked up. Reuben turned to her as well, but she could read nothing in those ashen eyes. Morning, Reuben said, and his voice was as warm and slow as the honey he'd been eating. You still look like shit, kiddo, her mother said. Drink some water and take an aspirin. Liquor makes you dehydrated. Kay snorted and walked down the rest of the stairs. On the television, a cartoon Batman chased the Joker through a spooky old warehouse. It reminded her of the old merry-go-round building. You guys are watching cartoons? The news is on in 10 minutes. I want to see the weather. I'm going up to New York for the parade. Oh, honey, when I saw Liz the other day, I told her how you were doing and everything, and she said she had something for you. You saw Liz? I thought you were mad at her. Nah, water under the bridge. Ellen was always happier when she was in a band. So she sent me an album? No, it's a bag of old clothes. She was going to get rid of them. She can't fit in any of that stuff anymore. It's in the dining room, the gray bag. Kay opened the plastic bag. It was full of glittering fabrics, leather and shiny vinyl. And yes, there it was, as shimmeringly purple as in her memories, the cat suit. She pulled it out reverently. How come you didn't tell me the real reason you didn't want to move to New York? Ellen glanced meaningfully in Reuben's direction. Reuben's face was carefully expressionless. Kay could not seem to marshal her thoughts well enough to find a reply. Do you guys want some coffee or something? Her mother shrugged. There's some in the kitchen. I think it's left over from the morning. I could make some new. No, I'll get it, Kay said. She went out into the kitchen and poured some of the black stuff into a cup. Adding milk only turned it a dark, sickly gray. She added several liberal spoonfuls of sugar and drank it like penitence. Reuben hadn't looked angry at all. To the contrary, he looked absurdly comfortable sprawled on the couch. She should have felt better, but instead it seemed as though the knots in her stomach were tightening. It was evening already, and soon he would be gone. She wanted him to want her more than she had any right or reason to expect from him, and that knowledge was as bitter as the day-old coffee. Kay. It was Reuben, a nearly empty jar of honey in one hand, leaning against the door frame. Oh, hi, she said, stupidly, holding up the cup. This is really bad. I'll make some new. I wanted to thank you. For what? For explaining what happened. For making me stay here last night. She took the old coffee and dumped it in the sink, hiding the embarrassed smile that was playing over her lips. She filled the pot with hot water and swirled a few times before dumping that too. His voice was very quiet when he spoke again. For not being afraid of me. She snorted. You've got to be kidding. I'm terrified of you. He smiled at Kay, one of his quick silver smiles, dazzling and brief. Thank you for hiding it, then. Quite realistic. She grinned back at him. No problem. I mean, if I'd known you liked it this much and all. He rolled his eyes, and it was so good to stand there smiling shyly at each other. All the silly words she had wanted to say to him suddenly began clawing up her throat, desperate to be spoken. I'm just glad it's over, she said, breaking the spell while she turned to spoon coffee grounds into a filter. He looked at her incredulously. Over? She stopped in mid-motion. Yeah, over. We're here and safe and it's over. Not to distress you, he said, but I very much doubt. Kay! Ellen called from the other room. Come see this. There's a bear loose. Just a minute, Mom, Kay called back. She turned to Reuben.
What do you mean, not over?
Kay, fairy is a place governed by a set of customs both severe and binding. What you have done has consequences.
Everything has consequences, she said. And the consequence of this is that the solitary fae are free again, you're free, and the bad queen is dead. That seems pretty over to me.
Kay, it's going to be off by the time you get here, Ellen called.
Kay took a deep breath and walked out into the other room. Ellen was pointing to the screen.
Will you look at this?
On the screen, a newsman was standing in the middle of Allaire State Park, announcing that a man had been murdered and partially devoured. The announcer reported that, judging by the claw marks, authorities were speculating that it was a bear.
Now I'm hungry, Kay said.
The announcer went on, his salt and pepper hair slicked back so that it did not move, his voice overly dramatic.
The man's dog was found attached to the body by a wrist leash and was apparently